The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.
We're riding on the bus on our way to Microsoft Campus for the second day in a row for MSN Search Champs version 2.0. And one of the people who has been invited to this small group of people who are not only bloggers but also search engine optimizers and professors from universities is Mick Stanwyck.
Stanick. Get it right.
Oh, yes. Stanick. I'm sorry. I was mistaken by the name tag he was originally given here. Mick Stanick, who is registered for GNOME Dex5 and will be returning to the Seattle area. And Mick, if you didn't know, is part of the podcast G'day Live. G'day, right?
G'day. G'day, mate.
Oh, so did I say it too American-like?
Yes, it's Americans have a lot of trouble saying g'day for some reason, so it's g'day.
G'day.
Yeah, that's perfect, spot on. We'll make an Australian out of you yet, Chris.
Oh, I don't know about that. I tried Vegemite once, and it didn't agree with me.
Yeah, something about black salted yeast on toast just doesn't agree with a lot of people. It really doesn't work.
So that's what I ate.
Essentially, yeah. Black yeast, yeah.
So when you were invited to Search Champs, what originally went through your mind?
I thought it was going to be a great opportunity to, sort of two things. One, the chance to get into the Microsoft campus and talk to some fascinating people completely outside of the Search Champs, but actually just to lay your hands on some of the great staff they've got was going to be a great opportunity. And secondly, it was obviously catching up with people like yourself and Mark Orchard and Buzz Bruggeman, and just everybody that's here is an amazing, talented, incredibly passionate group of people about what they're working on. So I took it as a great opportunity to sit on a plane for 18 hours and fly to Seattle.
And what do you think of our fair city of Seattle?
I like Seattle. It's been blue for 3 days. I think it's for 3 days we've had blue skies. So it's been nice. All these sort of stories about Seattle being the rainy city. It's like, no, it isn't. It's been wonderful. You could even see Mount Rainier. Is that right? You could even see Mount Rainier outside of my window this morning. So it was perfect.
All right, so we've got good weather, we've got a good city. Is this a place you'd like to come back and visit sometime?
Oh, definitely, definitely. So I'll be back for GNOME Dex in 8 weeks' time, about 8 weeks. So I was trying to figure if I could stay here for 8 weeks in between, but I figured the American immigration wouldn't let me probably do that. So, and Cameron, my buddy at G'day World and the podcast network, probably wouldn't like me to disappear for 6 or 7 weeks at a time. So, no, I'll be back in June for GNOME Dex, because GNOME Dex last year, I sat down in Sydney last year and listened to GNOME Dex on the live IT Conversations broadcast, and it was 2 o'clock in the morning, and I got up every morning and I listened to GNOME Dex for the 2-3 days, and it was absolutely fantastic. So I made the decision last year that I was definitely going to come back. Well, I was definitely going to come to GNOME Dex 5. It was just, there was no way that I was going to miss this. So it was, yeah, so I'm definitely coming back, and I'll be here for 3 or 4 weeks. So I want to spend a fair bit of time getting around Seattle, seeing the Cascades, the Olympics, and a lot of other things. And, yeah, it's a city I could move to.
All right, so give us your background. You just kind of sprang out of nowhere in some cases. A lot of us were introduced to you with the podcast you're doing with Cam G'day World. And not to be confused with Good Day Live, which is an L.A.-based show. I think you have a slightly better production quality, but that's just my opinion. Your background?
Well, I've been in the sort of technology business for about 15 years now, since early 1990, when I was... And I've been playing with computers since I was 8, 9, 10 years old anyway, so I got into it in 1990 and started doing some work with Melbourne University, where they had the first internet pipe into Australia, and was building a couple of internal websites for them using the Lynx browser when it was all text and there were no images. And that was really fun. I sort of got into the whole network internet thing, and that was really quite cool. And then I sort of realized that that's what I wanted to do for a living, is to move into that area for a living. So did a bit of work in Melbourne, did a bit of work in Sydney. Then, the browsers came out, and suddenly we had images that we could do. And it was like, my God, a GIF, a 5K GIF, and little lines, and little bullet points, and little animated burning logos. It was fantastic. So I sort of got into doing that from a coder's perspective. So I was programming sites and doing creative work. So, I was doing HTML, and I was doing Java early on when it came out, and I was doing stuff in Photoshop and doing stuff in Future Splash before it became Flash, and that was really cool. So realized eventually that my skills weren't necessarily in coding, they're a little bit more in the project management side of things. So started project managing, you know, producing and project managing things for people. So we started doing a lot of CD-ROMs back in the mid-90s. It was the CD-ROM era. So started doing a lot of training CD-ROMs, which was really interesting. That led me into a small spate of my career where I got involved in virtual reality. And the culmination of that was actually building, project managing the development of training simulators for the Australian military, which was just a whole nother world, working with, you know, building simulators that were teaching people how to shoot missiles or how to clean weapons or how to shoot mortar weapons. It was a fascinating life, and you got to play with a lot of cool toys. You had to work out the ballistic data on shooting a 7.62mm rifle and how much the wind would affect its travel distance over a period of time, because we'd have to build that into the simulator. So I got to shoot off a lot of really large weapons, which was really cool for a geek. It was a fun thing. But eventually, it was sort of like, it was an interesting business, but it was leading to the point where to build serious simulators, we needed to be spending a lot more money than what the Australian government was actually allocating to the training budget. So it was a real shame, but I stepped out of that business and still keep a lot of contact with the virtual reality community in Australia and around the world, and was actually one of the co-founders of the Virtual Reality Association in Australia. So that's always been a big part of my life. It's been something that will eventually come back one day, that whole the ability to visualise material in a much simpler way. So that, you know, that's going to get there. From there, I went on to working for interactive agencies that were sort of, you know, delving into the marketing area. So this is back in 96, 97, and marketing companies were realising that there was value in using the internet to do things. So started working as a producer for a couple of agencies in Australia. And that went on for a few years, got up to the dot-com period, took a job as a general manager at a company called Next Publishing, which is a magazine publisher in Australia that looks after Rolling Stone Australia, and at that stage had about 70% of the gaming publications in Australia. So our whole job there initially was to work out how to get their content online. And that was good. We took the team from maybe 3 people to 25, 30 people, built up a really good business, had pretty good autonomy in terms of what we were trying to achieve, and started building what was some firsts in Australia. We built one of the first free email tools that you could sign up for. We built one of the first community of websites where you could sign on and do a sort of the old homestead, sort of sign up, create your own little website. And that was all based around, well, if you were a Madonna fan, you could sign up and create a Madonna website. You could do links to the Rolling Stone sales site to sell the LP and get a commission out of it. And it was an interesting business. And then the dot-com crash happened, and that sort of... But it was fun. I got to spend a couple of $1 million for a guy that really needed to spend a couple of $1 million, and it was good times. From there, I went on to work for Ogilvy & Mather in Australia, so Singleton Ogilvy Interactive, which is the interactive arm of what is probably one of Australia's largest advertising companies. And I was employed there initially as an executive producer to build the team. They had marketing people, and I'm not a marketing person. I'm a geek. Early on in the military, I was doing C++ coding, so I've come from a geek background. So marketing was a completely new area to me, but I had been touching on it for a few years. So what Ogilvy and Mather wanted was they had people who could do marketing, but they wanted someone who really understood the technology and could talk the language of the marketing people and the clients and get them interested and start to build up the business in that area. So other than that, responsibility was also for hiring staff. So 4.5, 5 years ago when I started work with Ogilvy, we had about 3 staff. I left in last December, so December 2004, and we had about 21 staff in Sydney, Australia. We just put on staff in Melbourne, and we just put on staff in New Zealand. So the business had grown substantially. But 4.5 years of working for an advertising company made me realise that it was like, the closest I can equate it to was butting your head on a brick wall. It was trying to explain to people who traditionally work with television and with print and with radio ads and with direct mail, to go, look, this technology is really powerful. This is really cool technology. And it's not just for the cool sake. We can do things with the technology to increase the client's revenue, to increase their perception in the community, to increase the actual revenue of sales. There was a lot that we could actually do with the technology. But like I said, these were people who would rather spend money on television ads and print ads and the old traditional forms of media. So 4.5 years of trying to convince people that there was some really cool stuff out there was sort of like, look, time for me to move on and actually set up my own business. So set up a firm called Principius, which does consulting to marketing, advertising, PR firms on how to utilise what I refer to them at, to those guys, I talk about emerging technologies. So it's stuff that you and I use every day and probably have been using for 2 or 3 years. But to these guys, talking about SMS and talking about, you know, the mobile devices and talking about mapping, it's everyday stuff to us. But to them, it's something that's out of Star Wars. It's 5 years in the future. It's something out of Minority Report. It's completely different to them. So, and that's been fun. But along the way, Frank Arrigo, who's the head of MSDN developers in Australia, head of the MSDN development team, introduced me to Cameron Riley. It was one of those emails, Cameron meet Mick, Mick meet Cameron, you guys need to talk because you're really going to get on well together. And Cameron was an ex-Microsoftie out of Australia. So at that point, I was travelling to Melbourne quite often to build up the Melbourne team for Ogilvy. So Cameron and I would get together every week for an hour and have coffee and talk about technology and just a general chat about geek things and where they were going and, you know, where it was, the direction it was heading in. And at some point earlier in the year, I'd been playing with Eric Rice's audioblog.com and started playing with the concept of audio blogs, and wasn't really called podcasting back then. It was, you know, we were playing with audio files, and I did some recordings at TechEd in Australia on the trip there and the trip back and how, what it was about and how fun it was. And eventually we sort of, Cameron and I went, look, let's do a podcast. We have these 1 hour conversations. Let's just record them. We're interested in them. Well, other geeks might be interested in them. So we started recording these one-hour shows, and that's how G'day World started. And G'day World was fun. It was Cameron and I talking to each other, and then we started realising, hey, maybe we should interview people. And I think one of our first interviews was Buzz Bruggeman, the connector, the man himself. And Buzz, you know, we interviewed Buzz, and Buzz got us access. And there's Loic Lemieux just taking some photos with his Nokia phone.
Is that for a blog network?
It's for Chris Perillo. No. It's for the Chris Perillo show.
Oh, Chris Perillo?
So, wait, what are you recording right now?
I'm blogging you, Chris. I'm blogging for Chris show.
Why?
Oh, why? Oh, just for fun.
Do you have any other videos on that phone?
Oh, yeah, I have many videos. Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm just doing some small video blogging directly from the phone. So I think it's cool, that's all.
Which is good because, of course, I'm a small blogger.
We've
so,
got another camera.
Oh no, it's Robin Good.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. How's the camera doing?
Pretty good. The view is fantastic. Check it out.
You can record it. See, I only have a microphone, so when I hold it up to the window, see, no one can see anything. No one can see anything. So G'day World just kind of took off.
Yeah, G'day World went really well. It was, yeah, and the good thing was that Buzz got us into people like Doc Searles and a whole heap of people that Cameron and I traditionally, well, initially probably would not have got our hands on. So we started to interview some really good people through Buzz, and Cameron and I played all of our contacts over the years. So we started interviewing a couple of good Microsoft people, and we got Scoble on the show, of course. And the next thing you knew, after about 3 or 4 shows, and it was only 3 or 4 shows, we'd gone from a couple of hundred listeners that were all in Australia to 5,000, 6,000 listeners. And this was only in a matter of like 3 or 4 weeks. So we, at that point, we both suddenly went, hang on a sec. There's something in this. There's something in this concept of podcasting that we can do. I mean, I've left my job. I'm doing my own business. Cameron's left Microsoft doing his own business. We can devote a bit of time to this and see where it goes. So in February 14, on Valentine's Day, we launched the podcast network with 4 channels. So I think we had the we moved G'day World over to the podcast network. We had the Tech Addiction show. We essentially had 4 channels. That was the middle of February. We get to the end of March, so we just had our first full month of operation the end of March with a total of 14 channels launched. 27,000 unique listeners around the world, 60,000 MP3 files downloaded, just under 500 gigabytes of data transferred. And the one stat that I really love looking at is going, we have a show that is being accessed once every 44 seconds. We have a show being attacked from the network, being, you know, the pull down starts out of the RSS feed. So that suddenly has gone, we're onto a possible business plan here. So we're now looking at a possible funding model with some angel investors. We're looking at how we continue to grow the network. I mean, we've got 14 channels now. By the end of this month, we'll probably have 18 channels. By the end of May, we'll probably have 25 channels. And the plan is that it's a network. It's not just a directory. We maintain the shows. We appoint the hosts. I mean, we look for the hosts, and the hosts come to us as well. So it's not like the Odeo model or the Adam Curry model, the Podshow model. It's more of a traditional network model. So from the advertisers and sponsors' perspective, there's an inherent value in them possibly being involved with us, and that's really starting to take off. So it's yeah, it's turning out really good. It's taken both of us by surprise how popular, especially since it's two guys in Australia, and that's part of the inherent interest in it from people as well. I mean, you talk to Doc Searles and you go, so who are you guys? Oh, we're from Australia. Doc Searles, we are not worthy. We are not worthy. Doc Searles, you know. I mean, Clue Train changed my life. Like a lot of people probably on this bus, Clue Train changed their life of how they thought about how what the technology was doing. So, you know, interviewing people like Doc and, you know, Howard Rheingold. The Howard Rheingold interview he did was a short 20-minute interview, but Howard's one of those people that every decade of my life, I mean, I'm only 35, but in every decade of my life, literally, I've read a book by Howard Rheingold. And each one has had a huge impact on how I perceive technology and what it's actually enabling us to do. So from that perspective, whether the podcast network takes off and makes us, you know, multimedia moguls in the traditional sense of the word is great, is fantastic. If we make money out of it that allows us to continue to do it, that's great, that's fantastic. But the driver for me is that it gives me a chance to talk to some fascinating people. And that is the really cool bit. It's a great way to meet people. Much the same way along blogging is. It really introduces you to a crowd of people that are passionate about what they do. And that is why I'm in this business. You know, it's, if I wanted to make, you know, my mum's, you still have to explain to my mother what I do for a living, that I'm in technology and what I do, you know. And she's always, get a job in a bank. Look at your cousin. He's a bank manager. Get a job with your, you know, it's like, look, I can earn reasonably good money doing technology, mum. Believe me, a lot more than the bank manager's making. But I do this because I'm passionate. That's the only reason I do this. If I'm going to spend 12, 14, 16 hours a day, 7 days a week doing something, it's because I'm passionate about what I want to do. There's no point in doing it otherwise. So, and I find that there's a lot of people that don't do that. A lot of people will take a job and they'll just do their job. They'll do the 9-to-5. They'll go home. They'll, yeah. And yes, they have a life, but hey, I've got a great life as well. I get to travel to Microsoft. I get to sit on the bus with Chris Perillo. I get to hang around with Mark Orchard and Robert Scoble.
So let me ask. Well, first of all, I should say Cam was up here a few weeks ago. We were going to connect, and I had problems with my flight. So by the time I could get in touch, he was already taking off. So we missed each other in that case. But I wanted to find out a little bit more about the direction of the podcast network, this network that you're putting together. What kind of content are you looking to aggregate specifically?
Initially the content we had was primarily tech-based. So it was a tablet show, the mobile show, the gadget show, the MS developer show. Where we're heading to is that now that you start to look at the figures of the spread and uptake of mobile music devices, portable music devices like the iPod, the create, and I hate the word podcasting, like we all hate the word podcasting, but it works. It brings the audience to us. They love their little white headphones, and it works for us. So where we're heading to now is we'll continue to launch the tech shows, but we're really starting to look at the content that the general public, the general consumer will want to listen to. So we're looking at things like the we've got music shows, we've got the jazz show, the rock show, the goth show. We've got a couple of music shows coming online, which is great, and it's all PodSafe music, emerging artists. It's a really good opportunity for them and for us. But what we're looking for now is to look at the non-tech geek music shows. So it's people have lifestyles. People are into gardening. People are into doing their house renovations. People are into their animals. And what we're really looking at is how do we target those groups? I mean, we look at the gardening show, the gardening community. Gardening's the most popular hobby in America. You know, hundreds of millions of people have gardening as their hobby. And a lot of them now, my mother who's 60, won't listen to music while she's gardening or won't have an iPod while she's gardening. But people our age will have their music playing, might be listening to their iPod or whatever. So for us to now look at content to go, well, how can we actually develop content that you as a gardener could actually be interested in listening to for an hour a weekend? And it's relevant content to the Northern Hemisphere and so on. So we're really starting to look at breaking the content, the stuff that we're just getting given to us. We're really looking at breaking it out into those areas. So the gardening show, the pet show, you know, the mental health show, really looking at some issues that we may be able to work with. So we're working with a non-for-profit organisation in Australia that looks at helping kids who have trouble at school but are really into music or are into technology, but school, it's just not their thing. So this organisation is looking at how they can work with these children and help them. So, you know, we're looking at working with the podcast network and how we can leverage that for some of those sorts of organisations as well. So we're really looking at content for the everyday man and woman now. we'll continue to do the geek shows and the tech shows, but we're really looking at the content that someone who doesn't know what a podcast is, someone who just knows it's an audio show of some sort and I want to listen to it and it's cool. Now, the benefit for us is that the more niche the content gets, the greater the value to the advertiser. Because in the traditional advertising world, it's I can put a TV show on primetime on CBS, and it'll get 5 million viewers, and my ad might be relevant to only 2% of those 5 million viewers. Whereas we can get maybe 20,000 viewers to 20,000 listeners of a show, or 30,000 listeners of a show eventually. But I can guarantee you that the ads we'll be able to place on those shows will have 90% relevance to the listener. So the advertisers love that idea, and of course the dollar value for the advertising and sponsorship goes up. So it's quite a good model looking at how we're actually be generating revenue in the future. It's also, and we're building software to actually build MP3 files on the fly to actually look at your subs. So what we'll do is we'll offer people the opportunity to subscribe. So you're not just subscribing to the RSS feed, but hey, answer these 10 easy questions. You don't have to answer the questions, but if you do, we know that people don't like advertising, right? So if you answer the 10 easy questions, we guarantee you that there'll be 90% relevance in the ads that you do here. You're going to hear them. We've got to pay for this thing. It's the web. You can't pull advertising off the web. People generate revenue. People need to make a living to make these businesses grow, to make these online products grow. So we will have ads in our podcast. It's a given. We're not going to have them. Sorry, Dave. We're going to have ads in podcasts.
Yes, I'm sorry, Dave, too. We've had ads from day one. In fact, we've been advertising in our RSS feeds as LockerGnome for at least 3 years now. And
that's been going really well, hasn't it, the RSS stuff? So.
Oh, yeah, fantastic.
And so with us, what we're looking at saying is, well, the advertising is not only audio advertising, but what an advertiser will get is they'll get a text that in the RSS feed, because the show hosts are actually writing blogs for us as well based on their topics. So that's where you pick up the RSS feed from. So there's there'll be feeds in the RSS. There'll be audio ads inside these shows, as well as what advertisers love is their logo. They still want to see their logo somewhere. So they'll be able to get the traditional sort of branding on the website as well. So they really sort of get three things for their advertising dollar. They get three mediums for their advertising dollar. So
right now I know that our particular show, we did a beta with GoToMeeting a few weeks ago, and that went over so well. We never had so much feedback for our program. It was quite a dynamic way of doing it. So right now we're pursuing a long-term relationship with them.
Knowing that as well at a certain point of the show, weren't you? You actually had listeners using the GoTo product and being able to play with it.
Not just that.
I forgot. The time zone thing screws me up sometimes, and I missed that show, so it was like, yeah.
With any luck, we'll do it again in the future. It was really neat. We had Todd Maffin from iloveradio.org, of course, up with the CBC. What is it? Nerd Radio, I think.
Nerd Radio, he does. Yeah, that's cool.
He was on, and I was able to flip over to his screen, so everybody was able to see his screen when he was demoing things, and it was really, really neat. And then in the process, he upgraded me to a Flickr Pro account.
Oh, that's great. That's lovely. But that's the power. That's going back to the consultancy thing. That's the power of this technology. It's whole different way of being able to communicate with people and doing the whole clue train thing, markets of conversations. How is a better way, what is a better way to actually try and show go to my PC with people than to have them in that environment? They're listening to a live radio show over the web. They're actually using it on the web and going through that process. It's the brave new world of advertising and marketing, and
it's the way it works. Well, Mick, it looks like we've arrived on campus, so we're done.
Building 118. Opposite the Scoble building.
Apparently. So thanks for your time, Mick.
No worries. Thank you very much, Chris.
And we'll see you in a few weeks.
Yeah, and looking forward to it incredibly.
The Windows Media stream for the live broadcast of The Chris Perillo Show is provided by Limelight Networks. Listen to the live Chris Perillo Show in Windows Media Player. Download the latest version of the player for Mac and Windows users at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.